from MS1.
Yeah.
Dr. Carolison, are you available to speak to us? Just need to request going forward. I noticed that some members of NIHAW were speaking with their videos off. It's important that we see who we are talking to. So please let's switch on the video when we are presenting. Thank you, Dr. Carolison. Your mic is off. Unmute yourself.
Okay, is that better? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. So thank you for the opportunity. Good morning, Chairperson and members of the committee, colleagues, and everybody in attendance. I have submitted all the documents, the narrative, as well as the presentation, and the additional information that was requested. When I received the hour's presentation last night, I thought it fit then to draft an opening statement to address some of the issues specifically. I would take it that the members had ample time to study the full presentation, and so I would not mind running out of time. So my forward is rather on the lengthy side, but it is intended to respond to some of the NAWU issues that were raised that we were previously not aware of. And so if you allow me that latitude, I think it will be a very productive session. I have emailed this to Anele, and I've asked him to distribute it to all members. It is a Word document with two attachments. It says introductory remarks, and the two attachments is my personal performance scorecard and the recognition agreement that I have signed with NAWU on a particular time. So, Chair, if that is okay with you, I will then resort back to my opening statement. I just want to check whether Anele actually did distribute the opening statement to all members. It would be very useful if you have a copy, or rather, if you have an electronic copy in front of you.
No, I have not received that opening statement.
Chair, I just received it now. I will send to members. I will forward it.
Okay, that is very good, because if I load it, it will take the whole screen. So, Chairperson, in the interest of time, I will then start. So, as the administrator of NISPAS, I welcome this opportunity towards the end of my term to clear ongoing allegations leveled against myself, advisors, staff members, and the organization. NISPAS can ill afford to move forward beyond administration with these matters unresolved and a poor understanding of the value brought by the administration intervention. We want to put it out there that we don't agree with these allegations, but we remain respectful of the rights of NAWU to articulate to this committee and to other bodies of oversight their concerns and or evidence of maladministration. Having said that, we are also determined to protect our rights and our reputations, and therefore will cooperate with any legitimate process that may be instituted to get to the bottom of these allegations. Just responding to the last speaker, which mentioned specific names, some of those statements are factually so incorrect that I have indicated that on my response, my confidential response to you. And I'll use just two examples. Mr. Shai is not in this first employment. The person that she referred to as having worked for my wife did not work for my wife. And the differentiation that must be drawn between advisors and permanent employers must be clear to understand the context. Moreover, organizations onboard people not only through the HR process, but also through the supply chain management. And this would be the case of contractors. That was a very silent omission from a person that should know HR processes a lot better. However, we are taking these allegations very seriously, And to this end, I saw it fit to invite our legal counsel, who is assisting us on similar allegations that were directed to the Office of the Public Protector. I also invited the chairperson of our Independent Audit and Risk Committee, Mr. Bulelani Mashlunga, who is in the House, to this meeting, as I'm sure that this presentation will provide insights into the challenges faced by NSFAS and areas which will continue to require redress. Accompanying me is Mr. Prakash Mangri, Advisor on Finance and Governance, Ms. Sibongile Mngabe, the Chief Corporate Services Officer, Ms. Tufema Palela, our Chief Operations Officer, and Ms. Tanya Isaacs, Chief for Governance, Risk and Compliance. I also wish to point out that whilst our head internal audit function reports administratively to Ms. Isaacs, he is, in line with good corporate governance, answerable to the NSFAS Independent Audit and Risk Committee, which was established in June 2020 and formally inducted into NSFAS on the 16th of July 2020. NSFAS is an extremely complex organization with more than 700 beneficiaries in over 70 institutions, administering an annual budget close to $40 billion in 2020. NSFAS reports to a number of oversight bodies and is subject to all statutory regulations of a Schedule 3A company. As evinced, the failure to execute against the mandate have in the past, and I should say resulted, there's a typo in here, not faulted, as in the past resulted in widespread interruptions of the academic project and extremely damaging protests on campus. Whilst we certainly would not claim that all of us have been arrested, there is sufficient evidence from all stakeholders that the frequency and intensity of campus disruptions decreased significantly over the term of the administration. That evidence can be obtained from the vice chancellors and from the student leaders with whom I interact quite regularly. One of the key innovations that was introduced under administration within the NSFAS system is the establishment of a dedicated TVET administration. This sector, the TVET sector, had been poorly served in the past, and their allowance structure was inferior to that of the university system. Together with DHET, we have made significant progress in narrowing those gaps. A very important point I want to come to, Chairperson. The terms of reference of the administrator are very clear and supersede any pre-existing strategy, and by implication, the measurement of the KPIs in its annual performance plan. This was not universally understood or accepted within NSFAS, and in fact was resisted by some managers. We previously presented to Peter outcomes of our IPP that were resulted from... Yes.
Sorry to disturb you. Anele, please don't put off the letter there. You can just go ahead and read the statement. It doesn't have to be projected on the screen.
Okay, please go back. So we previously presented two featured outcomes of our APP that resulted from being measured against poorly constructed KPIs. The performance against the KPIs in place for both 2018 and 2019 was below 15%, and Ms. Nyalwa confirmed that it was 9% and 12% respectively for those particular years. The extremely poor reporting was highlighted by the PCHET on more than one occasion. I resolved to remedy this and to bring alignment between the terms of reference of the administrator and the APP. To this end, I contracted external consultants, and in consultation with the AG, the Deep Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and of course the DHET, we redrafted the APP to reflect the realities of the administration. I'm happy to report that significant progress in improving the smartness and relevance of our KPIs will manifest itself in the publication of our 2021 APP and strategic plans. I have attached to these opening remarks my 2019 performance scorecard as measured against achievements against my terms of reference. My scorecard was assessed against a portfolio of evidence by the DHET senior officials and signed off by the Director General and then forwarded to the Minister. And you will note that the score reflects 82%. On the issue of regularity of my appointment for a third term, I wish to comment as follows. I received letters of appointment from both Ministers Pandor and Nzimande as per published government gazette. I have just made double sure this morning that the third appointment was gazetted, and I can reply in the affirmative. It was gazetted, contrary to what was stated earlier. I therefore view my current appointment as legitimate and binding. I further understand that the extension of my appointment remains valid, and unless challenged, this is a bit of a mess up here, remains valid and binding unless and until challenged through the correct methods. My relationship with both ministers had been frank and honest, and I benefited tremendously from their intellect, their insights into the sector, and their desire to improve our country. Our discussions throughout with the ministers and with the department officials had been robust, and there were no holy cows that were spared in our quest to rehabilitate Nisfas. Allegations that I have a corrupt relationship with Minister Nzimande is offensive, insulting, and baseless. At no stage in my interactions with Minister Nzimande did I feel coerced, disempowered, or threatened. And to this end, I reject allegations of a corrupt relationship in the strongest possible terms. Allegations have been leveled against me relating to conflict of interest during my term as executive administration of NSFAS. I categorically deny any conduct which amounts to a conflict of interest. I have never acted in the way which preferred or furthered my personal interest or persons, individuals, or juristic over others. NSFAS is committed to good governance and as such operates within structures aimed at reducing the risk of conflict of interest which may influence the day-to-day activities of the organization. I can refer to many matters, just as a way to interrupt Chairperson, where staff members were listed as my family, and I had constantly had to take deep pains to prove to the organization that no family of mine is employed at NSFAS. In particular, matters surrounding the appointment of the termination of staff and supply chain matters enjoy the protection of strong governance structures. These practices ensure fair, equitable, and impartial results. I am acutely aware of danger of conflicts of interest existing in an organization, especially one in which an administrator like myself has vast powers bestowed on him or her. These conflicts were identified and addressed by employing strong governance principles which must be observed and adhered to in the appointment and termination of staff during my tenure as executive administration of NSFAS. It is also important to note that the supply chain structures adhere to the PFMA, the National Treasury Regulations, and Supply Chain Management Guidelines. In addition, the supply chain structures employ strong governance principles to ensure fairness, impartiality, and equitable outcomes. At the start of my administration, I dissolved the remaining governance structure, which was the then Audit and Risk Committee. That decision was not taken lightly, and I did that with careful consideration after my initial risk assessment. And I did only so after I informed Minister Pandor about my reasons, and I also informed equally the chair of PCHET of this dissolution of the structure. In fact, the chair urged me to make sure that the structure be replaced as soon as possible. I initiated the process of restoring this vital governance mechanism, and I'm happy to announce that the AS subcommittee was inducted, as I said before, on the 16th of July 2020. Already NSFAS benefited from this considerable expertise from these independent members as we prepare for the finalization of our annual report and our auditor general engagement that precedes this. In my presentation, I will reflect on the rationale for placing NSFAS under administration. At this stage, I wish to point out that Nahavu, in its motivation for administration, identified the irregular appointment of a number of senior managers. This top-heavy management structure certainly exacerbated the paucity in skills, since newly appointed senior managers in some cases did not have the requisite technical skills. This loss of budget crowded out acquisition of technical personnel, and to this end I decided to freeze all vacancies and to ring-fence the budget for critical skills. I may want to add, that contrary to what was projected here, that I was not in charge of developing the critical skills, but the EXCO was in charge, and that all changes to that critical skills list was done in consultation with the different EXCO members and ratified at EXCO, and we have managed to prove this. And by the way, EXCO was one of the governance structures that I introduced, in addition to other governance structures. I also became aware that our HR policies were very poor and outdated, and the few that existed culminated in an excessive amount of grievances and disputes. There was neither a bargaining council in place nor proper employee engagement mechanisms when I arrived. In response, and as part of my terms of reference, I initiated an HR forensic investigation, the results of which we have communicated to this committee. We are acting on the recommendations, and unfortunately a number of senior managers are facing disciplinary actions. Excuse me. I engaged the CEO and the executive leadership of NSFAS immediately when I arrived as administrator regarding their continued employment and commitment to NSFAS. In cases where agreements of separations were reached, exit packages were negotiated with a clear understanding that those people that are leaving will be brought to account if so warranted. Some senior managers left on their own volition. This left only the acting COO, Ms. Tasneem Salasa, and I mentioned the name since it was mentioned, and she was on secondment from UCT by the Department of Higher Education and Training and appointed before I arrived. I won't go into the details of her suitability and experience. I think that CV was provided through the parliamentary members. So it was only myself and Ms. Tasneem at some stage, Salasa, that was in the executive structure. I should also say that then person responsible for governance and risk, which was also a secondee from Nedbank, also elected to leave. So this necessitated that some of the advisors had to assume acting positions, which beneficially then also offset a large part of their cost to company. So when the CFO resigned, and he resigned for good reason, he was an acting CFO at NSFAS, and he got a permanent CFO position at Walter Sisulu, I then requested Mr. Prakash Mangre to act in that position. Other forensic investigations identified fraud and corruption, and some staff had been arrested. Investigations are ongoing and cases have been forwarded to the authorities for criminal investigations and processes. The opportunities for fraud and diversions of funds in NSFAS were plentiful in the previous NSFAS. The voucher of disbursements system, the excessive commercial interests that prevailed in the NSFAS disbursement system, and the dysfunctionality of the IT systems and governance provided rich pickings for those less honorable. The administrator scrapped the voucher system and introduced cash allowances, which is now referred to as the NSFAS wallet. So students are no longer getting vouchers to redeem at selected retailers. They are getting cash, and we renamed that to be called the NSFAS wallet. And it is indeed so that the service provider for the voucher was the one that was selected to manage the NSFAS wallet. Let me be very transparent about that. This greatly improved and shortened the disbursement value chain and moreover empowered students to manage their own finances, as vouchers were previously directed to certain retailers and were limited to particular purchases, which was in violation of our anti-competitive laws. We have a structured program to develop and introduce HR, finance and ICT policies, the latter being important as poor ICT governance and financial controls led to NSFAS having to restate the irregular expenditure declared in 2018 and 2017, which was then cumulative at 285 million to 2 billion, with the cumulative impact thereof being reported in 2019 annual report as 7.5 billion. The evolution of the NSFAS policy framework is documented and audited and largely contributed to the total de-risking of NSFAS. Except where I deal with direct reports, I am generally not party to committees making decisions on matters relating to human resources or supply chain management. I act on the recommendation of the professional staff who support the various structures within the organization. Notwithstanding these recommendations, I apply my knowledge, my expertise, and my understanding of the sector before agreeing to accept any recommendation from any of the structures within the organization. Amongst my consideration, I consider whether or not my executing role could be deemed to be a conflict of interest. It is true that I am acquainted with many people throughout the education as well as the private sector, as I have been an executive and a professional within these sectors for periods spanning decades. During this time, I worked extensively with many people and organizations within these sectors, and I've had the privilege of working with really bright minds during this time. In my executive career, I have appointed people that I knew from previous relationships or even students that studied under me. In such cases, I duly followed the requisite declaration protocols. Declaration protocols for NSFAS, which I have also refined during my tenure at NSFAS. My relationships are professional, and the successes of the organization during the administration period is evidence that the correct people were chosen to do the jobs for which they were appointed. The cancellation of the laptop tender is referenced in the Nahawu submission. Whilst my legal advice indicates that I have the authority to cancel any tender, such cancellations will nevertheless enjoy the full audit scrutiny of the Auditor General. In addition, NSFAS will cooperate and is willing to submit itself to any legitimate process that will enhance the transparency, as the integrity of this project must remain above reproach. We have inserted the chronology of events of the recently cancelled laptop tender as follows, and I'll be brief about it. On the 4th of June 2020, there was a letter sent by the Minister of Higher Education that NSFAS will manage the procurement of the supply and delivery of laptops to NSFAS students in accordance with legislators' prescripts. On the 4th of June, I approved the executive administrator for the shortened tender advertisement period from 21 days to 10 working days in accordance with Treasury Regulations 16A.6.3(c). We are always committed to the following principles, that we will not exclude in any way the office of the Chief Procurement Officer of the National Treasury, and that we will take guidance from them on the development of the prescripts and requirements for tender processes. And to this end, I assigned Mr. Prakash Mangri to represent NSFAS in our engagements with the Chief Procurement Officer. And at a very high level, some of the prescripts was that there must be localization of the supplier. In other words, the products should preferably be manufactured in South Africa, that not be imported as far as possible, not just be imported. Normal BE requirements, SMME development requirements, and then of course also suitability for supply. Following this process, on the 18th of June, a final support for the bids specification by the BSC following the review and support that we received from the National Treasury OCPO. On the 18th of June, final approval of the bid specification committee. I'll go quickly through this to save time, Chair. Tender advertisement. The tender was advertised on the 26th of June. 26th of June, advertisement of the clarification note for the laptop quantities to be included in the reference letters. And on the 13th of July, it was the closing date. On the 22nd of July, approval for the appointment of an observer from the Department of Science and Technology was made by the BAC chairperson in accordance with Section 4.6 of the circular issued by National Treasury. The appointment of the observer from the department was supported by the National Treasury, OCPO, and upon my recommendation, Mr. Ngabe was approached and requested to join based on his expertise and, maybe also important, based on the fact that he was the task team chairperson that managed the process prior to being handed over to NSFAS. On the 15th July to the 19th of August, bid evaluation process proceeded. And the statistics, 9 of the 150 bets were disqualified. 141 of the 150 bets were disqualified for not achieving the mandatory MAI requirements. And then a BAC recommendation was made to the administrator that the process be cancelled according to that particular regulation. And the basic reason in English is that none of the bidders met the mandatory requirements. I corresponded with the OCPO around the process to be followed when tenders like this is cancelled, and I informed the minister accordingly. I should say that the tender has been reopened. One of the main reasons why most of the bidders failed was their ability to supply along those criteria that I've listed earlier. And so some of the criteria that was relaxed was the supply ceiling that hopefully will allow more bidders to meet this requirement. I'm close to completion, Administrator. This one under administration is neither averse nor reluctant to submit to oversight. I meet on a regular basis face-to-face with the Minister and the Deputy Minister. I have monthly meetings with the Director General and his senior personnel where progress against my terms of reference and strategic issues are discussed. We have continued to honour our reporting and responsibilities to PCHET and the Select Committee. We work collaboratively with the AG on resolution of irregular expenditure and cooperate with them on the resolution of audit queries. We are at idem with assertions that our ICT systems are not fit for purpose. This was communicated to me by me many times to PCHET and to the Minister, and indeed this was confirmed by the appointment of the Ministerial Task Team. I don't want to speak on their behalf. And it is clear that what we have achieved was because we were able to use this dysfunctional system to the best of our ability to disperse to poor and vulnerable students. I have received a note from our COO that I should mention that our success rate of disbursement is well in excess of 95% to poor and vulnerable students. And we are talking about more than 720,000 students. Chair, I still have time. I need to be guided by you. I'm busy now for about half an hour, so I will then deal with the presentation and see how far I get with that. If Anyali can flight the presentation, please. Is it possible to fly there?
Hey, Anele, are you taking us to the presentation?
Yes, I'll do so.
Okay, in the meantime, let me take a list of members who want to engage with the presentation. Just raise your hand on the platform there. Yeah? Yeah, while waiting for the presentation to be put on the screen, let me take members who want to engage so that we save time. Okay. I don't get any hands. Members are quite satisfied with the presentations, I guess. All right, so I think it's going to be the chair who only says, seeing that there's no one who's willing to engage, and they will then...
Yeah, we did check the list. We are raising hands.
Check the list on the right, chair. We raised our hands.
Yeah. Where we see the hands, yeah.
Check on chat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hey.
So, go to the participants. On the participants, you will see there, on your extreme right, there is raised hands.
Yeah, we've done that.
Yeah, we have raised hands.
You must just go check. There's a list there for you.
Okay, all right. Let's continue with the presentation.
Okay. So, Adali, are you in slideshow mode? Okay. Okay, so we can start here. Thank you for that. I'm not going to rehash the reasons why NISPAS was placed under administration. The board requested the minister to dissolve the board and place NISPAS under administration. Of course, the payment, non-payment of student allowances were well documented. The NOCLA report was referred to. And then, of course, the AWU also lodged a request to the minister to place NISPAS under administration. If you go to the next slide, please. Okay, so, yeah. So I want to speak briefly to the appointment of advisors. So that the appointment of the administrator provides for the appointment of specialists in particular technical fields in concurrence with the minister. The audit trails of all of these appointments for all three periods of administration is available. The process of identifying these candidates were done in conjunction with the DHET and the minister, and a pool of candidates were identified. Appointments were made in concurrence with the minister based on the qualifications, the experience, and moreover, at that particular point, the availability of people for an initial one-year period. Similar process was followed for the second period of administration, where again, an assessment was made for the changing needs of the organization, and that was also therefore then submitted through to the minister for approval. I would just like to pause at this point and say the fact that a person was not appointed for a second term did not mean that that person has failed, as was claimed, and that certainly is without any basis. When the administrator was appointed, as I said earlier, the entire top structure basically departed, either through dismissal, negotiations, or resignations, and therefore some of the special advisors were required to act in the vacated top management structure. The secondment of the acting CEO from UCT was already in place prior to the commencement of the administration. Next slide. Now, one of the key things that I did as administrator was to do a risk assessment so that we are, because of the crisis and the institutional collapse of NISPAS, rapid action was required. So we spoke constantly about the system instability and the reliability. It was so bad that the system failed without any warning on a daily basis, and therefore there was very small reliability that we could place on this. Also, what is very interesting is that in August, it took 8 months up to 8 months went by before students got their funding. And there was a blame game between NISPAS and institutions. NISPAS said that they had transferred 11 billion rand over to the institutions, and the institutions had not failed. What went unsaid and what we uncovered in our root cause analysis is that whilst this money was transferred, no remittances were provided. So institutions did not know who to pay the money to, although they had the money. And in developing that remittance system, we were able to, over a very short space of time, within 1 month, we were able to release such funds to students. We were able to identify a further 150,000 students, which led to a further disbursement, bringing the total disbursement over that very short period of time to 14 billion. That brought big stability to the sector, and the 2018 year, therefore, from that point onwards, proceeded rather smoothly. There was also total collapse of the disbursement governance. People were dispersing from their kitchen tops at home, and that's what they told me. And we put a stop to that. And the system that was not only unstable, the amount of portals that were undetected that led into our system was just frightening. There's no other way to describe it. There was an absence of ICT governance and controls. In other words, people could make changes to the live system They could change names, they could change amounts, and that was a project that we had to also then bring on board very quickly. The frightening thing was that the most frightening thing was that the cybersecurity was sub-zero, and this report was done by the previous board. Nobody shared that with me when I arrived. In our risk assessment, we identified this to be a problem, and the then ARC board members that were there did not say a thing about the existence of a forensic report a technical report on this matter. Only afterwards, one of the staff members approached me and showed me that indeed there is a cybersecurity report which was never implemented. And that report showed that cybersecurity was sub-zero for NISFAS. The expected level for an organization such as NISFAS is 4 out of 5. We have identified that risk to be a massive risk, and we actually shut down all illegal portals and clamped down on all access to the system. And that probably also explains some of the frustrations that people suffered because of the excessive clamping down on access and insistence on discipline in accessing the systems. The corporate culture was toxic. The HR governance was dysfunctional. We have commissioned an HR forensic report, which we have shared with the PCHET and which I'm very willing to share again once to whoever is interested in that. And in that HR forensic, some of the people that we are now charged are being implicated, and it details the level of dysfunctionality. We are taking that report on board as we go along to fix the HR system. And then, of course, spoke to the top heavy management structure and the severe lack of technical skills that Mr. Safato. Next slide. So this just gives you a sense of the 2018 risk report. Everything was in red. And in 2019, we did a quantification of the extent of risk mitigation. We have done something similar for 2020, and I was hoping that we would actually have the 2020 slide here. Now, this was necessary because NISFAS was in such major risk of catastrophic collapse that we had to take immediate steps to de-risk the organization. And this provided us with guidance with which should be the first actions to take. I will go further because this is all in our annual report. Next slide. So I formulated a strategy which spanned the three stages of administration. The first stage was literally business rescue and stabilization. The second stage was building interim sustainability. And the stage three was finalized handover and assisted the ministerial task team with the NISFAS redesign. So the stage one was, let me state it very categorically, Chair, that NISFAS was a much worse state than what I was told when I was appointed and that was anticipated at that particular point. So we literally had to go into the business rescue mode, and at that particular stage, we took on board many consultants to come and assist us with a clear understanding that NISFAS cannot be run by consultants. In stage two, we then started to replace such consultants with more permanent employees or permanent appointments. That is evident in our top structure, where we have permanent executives now. It's evident also in our ICT division, where we have more permanent people than before. And it's also evident in our critical list that we are appointing against, that we are now building the sustainability as an interim. The reason why we say interim is because stage three will really determine what the final NISFAS would look like when the ministerial task team add in their recommendations about the future operating model of NISFAS. And therefore, once that is done, certainly a relook of the profile and of the profile of skills that will be required. We are also aware of the evolution of the fourth industrial revolution, and we are beginning to, or we will have to, into the future, concentrate more on data scientists and big data specialists to run an organization of NISFAS of this size. Next slide. I just go into some of the detail, which I've mentioned before. about the business rescue imperatives. I'll skip forward if you don't mind, Anneli. I spoke about the building of sustainability, and these are some of the points. The next slide, please. And then also, of course, on the future operating model for NISFAS is part of the ministerial task team. Now, in this section, we are dealing with specifics on the Nahawu complaints. So if you can move to the next slide. Just to the time, too. Okay. This slide basically speaks to the appointment of
we can hear you now. Dr. Carolison? Anela, can you hear me? Anela?
Yes, I can hear you.
I can't hear Dr. Carol Lesson. I think his mic is off. I can't hear him. I'm not sure whether anybody can hear Dr. Carol Lesson.
We can't hear him, Chair.
Okay. Yeah, let him be assisted there to come back. Just find out if I think he has switched on his mic or something has happened to him. In the meantime, let's get a list of members who wants to engage. I saw on the chat, I saw Honorable Lizie, I saw Honorable Olomisa waving on the platform. Who else wants to engage with the presentation?
Tembe Kwayo.
Okay, Tembe Kwayo.
We have raised hands this time. On that platform, Anela should give you the list of everyone.
Well, I can see it from my side, Honorable Mukata.
Not that, sir.
Honorable Mananifo. Tibi,
I've got seven names here. I've got Honorable Lipie, Honorable Holomisa, Honorable Tembe Kwayo, Honorable Mkacha, Honorable Dodata, Honorable Mananiso, and Honorable Sibia.
Chairperson, Ms. Madiba as well. Bibi Madiba would like to have a say.
Who's that?
Bibi Madiba.
Okay. No, Bibi, we are only opening for members only now.
Okay. Noted.
We are done. I'm closing my list. Okay. We will have seven members engaging with the presentation. Anneli, are you winning with Dr. Carolison?
Okay, on the system he's in and his mic is on, so I'm not sure what's the issue.
Okay. Maybe let's take a break. Don't lock off members. Let's just leave the system as is, but take a 5 minute body break whilst Anele is trying to locate Dr.
Okay.
Carol Lesson, and then when we come back.
No, I'm not on mute.
It's not on mute, it's just
waiting. Oh, you're back. But in any case, let's take a 5 minute story break. It's now eleven. We will be back at 11:20.
Okay, hello Chair, can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Just sort out your gadget there. Just make sure that you don't get on and off. Use this 5 minutes. We lost you there for a while, Dr. Carolison. Yeah, you know. All right, the meeting is adjourned for the next 5 minutes. We'll be back at 11:20.
Sorry, Chair. I don't know what has happened. Can you hear me now?
The meeting is adjourned for 5 minutes, Dr. Carolison.
Hello?
Hello?
It's adjourned.
For 5 minutes.
See you later.
We can hear you, Dr. Carolison.
Hello, Chair, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you, Dr. Carlson, but for now the meeting is adjourned for 5 minutes.
Oh, okay, my sincere apologies. I went on a strange mute, which I don't understand, so I had to log out and log in back in again.
No problem.
Okay, Tani Frank Tani is the CAS registered in Saika. If you have a go on the Prat, Frank of Tanya was a registered CAS with a Saika. Please, Prat, hold on to something.
Administrators, which are both noted. I think
we as a portfolio committee at this point in time are missing quite a few important key stakeholders, whom we're also supposed to pose questions to based on these two presentations. One, the minister is supposed to be here to answer on specific questions related to, one, the laptop issue that has been raised, two, the interference in terms of the tendering processes, thirdly, some of the allegations in relation to the appointment of personnel at NFR. Secondly, we do need the Department of Higher Education and Training to be here, because NSFAS is an entity that reports to the Department of Higher Education and Training and ultimately the Minister on specific things, and I think I will touch on them. But the point that I would like to make, Chair, is that today, as a portfolio committee on higher education, science and innovation, we need not just to make recommendations but to resolve on a particular way forward. Because part of our responsibility as an oversight body is to make the relevant resolutions on issues of this nature, of which I will make recommendations at the end on how I believe we should resolve moving forward on this particular matter. These issues have been coming forth to individual members, including myself, via email and via, you know, WhatsApps, you know, and all of these allegations have been coming forth. And I think, Chairperson, first and foremost, I would like to go through some of the points that were presented by Nahau, and I want to ask specific questions to the different stakeholders. First of all, Administrator, there's an allegation here that basically says that you are appointing people that don't have the requisite skills. There's a form of nepotism when doing so. There's a specific example of Sibongile Mnwabe. If maybe you can give comment when it comes to that, Administrator. And I did read your presentation, I've read your letter, I've read what you've written to us as a portfolio committee. If you can maybe give comment maybe on those type of allegations. But the one point that I want to speak to, Chair, is the laptop tender. I have written to you, Chairperson, as of the portfolio committee to request the report from the Department of Education and Training regarding this laptop issue. As the Honorable Tia has indicated that... Yeah.
When did you write to me?
Chair, I wrote to you yesterday. But yes, I'm sure you would you will see that post the meeting, Chair. But I did write to you, Cecil Anel, as well. Initially, before that, I had WhatsApped him to ask him what the process would be, and then I did write to you after that. Chair, the first thing is that I would like you, Chair, to share the report with us of the Department of Education and Training regarding the laptop tender, because we need to know what is happening there. Secondly, I would advise that we do a recommendation or make a resolution that this particular issue must go to SCOPA, because it's a supply chain management issue and it deals with PFMA, and we need them to deal with that particular issue beyond our own inquiry, which I believe we should conduct as a portfolio committee. Thirdly, in the process of doing that particular inquiry, we need to call the relevant stakeholders, including the chair of the bid adjudication committee, which was allegedly removed. But I do believe that we must do our own separate inquiry, make a recommendation or resolution that says that this particular issue must go to SCOPA. And thirdly, the minister must come and brief us as to the allegation regarding Mr. Mandela on this particular issue. And then lastly, like I requested, Chair, you then supply that report from the Department of Education and Training. The other issue that has been raised, Chair, is... Just give me a second. The other issue that has been raised is the issue of misleading Parliament. But coupled with that is the issue of outsourcing the annual performance plans as well as the annual report. As alleged, I was one of the people that asked why over 501,000 or close to 500,000 was outsourced or paid out to a service provider to basically prepare the annual report to the administrator. There was a written response on that, which I still have with me. This issue is now coming up again regarding Mr. Shai, administrator. I think, Chair, these are one of the issues that when we do our forensic inquiry as part of our oversight role, this issue must be part of that in terms of how many people were actually consulted or given a consultation in terms of preparing documents, legal documents or legally binding documents of the administration of the entity of NSFAS, and ultimately were presented to us. Secondly, the part of the investigation as well, or inquiry, must be the allegations that have been made that the administrator has misled Parliament in terms of his responses regarding SBAC or the NSFAS wallet, regarding the responses on VBS, which I personally asked, regarding the responses regarding what I've just mentioned now of the annual report. Then, administrator, there's a slide on the NHAO presentation that talks about some of the costs incurred from the CCMA as well as the legal costs to the entity based on cases that you might have lost or erred on. And I just wanted to check whether those particular loss of cases or the loss of money in terms of legalities as well as the CCMA, was that under your own administration? What were the causes of that? And may we get a full report on those particular issues as well. Then, Chair, in terms of some of the questions that I would like to pose to the administrator, I don't know if there's a representative, Chair. Like I said, we're missing quite a few people in terms of stakeholders. I don't know if there's a representative from the ministerial task team that is supposed to overhaul or do an overhaul review of NSFAS like we have requested, but I will ask the questions anyways and see if we get an answer. Honorable Lithia did mention this point of the APP that was tabled that had inconsistencies. I just wanted to check with you from administrator, has the new revised APP been submitted? Because I remember I was the one who asked that particular question. Secondly, if you can maybe give us a full financial breakdown on expenditure relating to the remuneration of the people that you've now appointed as advisors, as well as the consultants, if we can just have a full document that is submitted to us so that we can make an informed decision. If you can update us in terms of what is the process, what is the progress in terms of the appointment of a new CFO, the new CEO, and a new board as part of your terms of reference. And then lastly, in terms of the terms of reference, administrator, what have you implemented thus far, and what have you achieved? And lastly, Chair, the point that Honorable Walimisa raises is very important, so that we also get some legal guidance in terms of the appointment of the administrator. And I think the minister would have been able to guide us on this, but I think it's something that we also require answers to. But my recommendations at the end, Chair, are as simply as follows. One, we need to recommend or resolve that SCOCO must investigate the laptops tender issue at NSFAS, and we also need to conduct an inquiry as a portfolio committee on the laptop tender. Please provide the report from the Department of Education and Training. They must also come and present to us, as well as the minister must come and account on the allegations that have been put forward. Secondly, Chairperson, part of the resolution that I would like to put forward, just so that I capture it correctly, part of the resolution that I would like us to put forward is that the relevant stakeholders based on the NHAO presentations, including the people that have come and presented today, must form part of that inquiry, and any other person that we deem fit for that. A date must be set for that with specific guidelines in terms of what we're trying to get to the bottom of here. And ultimately, the aim is to make sure that we get NSFAS functioning with the assistance and the guidance of the ministerial task team, ensuring that there's an appointment of a new CFO, a new CEO, and guided by the appointment of a new board. I think those are the only things that from my side, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mutada. Just before I go back to Honorable Mukash, maybe just to say, to find out whether members have received the additional information
in respect to the cost of the advisors, accommodation and all of that, as well as their profile. I'm asking because Honorable Nodada was asking a question about the remuneration of advisors, which is information that has been circulated. Did you get it?
Yes, we did.
Okay, no, that one then is fine. All right, let's proceed. But just to say that I haven't received your request, Honorable Nodada, about that report, but the report from the Director General is available in Parliament, in the Portfolio Committee. So it can be made available if there is a request. I must also put on record that we've asked the NSFAS administrator certain specific questions regarding that laptop tender. And the feedback that we got was that the matter is ongoing and therefore information cannot be given to us because it may jeopardize the ongoing process. So of course, the natural expectation is that as soon as the process is done, we'll then be furnished with that information. But we did ask for that. But for now, we had to hold everything because of that feedback that we got that the process is ongoing. Honorable Mukacho?
Thank you, Chair. Okay. You guide me again if my connection becomes unstable again.
You're much clearer now. I think just proceed.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Chair, so as I was saying that in relation to, you know, cleansing NSFAS, as we dismiss and as we appoint, Chair, due procedure must be followed, and it must be fair, it must be lawful, it must be democratic as to the laws and the constitution of this country. And so, Chair, you know, on that matter then, I don't understand how people can be, well, the allegation around how people can be interviewed from restaurants. And so can we please have clear evidence with regards to when X person was interviewed, where they were interviewed, because there should be some form of correspondence, communique, or minutes, and that would become evidence to, you know, when and where people were interviewed and what processes were followed to the point at which people became appointed into these positions, Chair. I also want to reiterate the sentiments of Dr. Tembegwayo with regards to whistleblowers and their protection. And I think, you know, in all institutions, Chair, we must never create an environment where we think we are, I don't want to say gods, but when, you know, we think we as individuals who lead these institutions are the beginning and the end of these institutions, Chair. So that allegation for me stands very strongly, and I'd like a clear response with regards to that, Chair. And just to echo your sentiments as I move on to my next point, I feel like there are specific allegations that have been made, and perhaps some of these allegations can be supported by evidence. And I feel as though, Chair, there should be specific responses from those who are being accused on these specific allegations, and if that must be done in writing, then so be it. So, for example, with the travel and accommodation expenses, a supporting document was sent to us yesterday. The document says advisors travel costs between 21 August to 30 September 2020. Is there an omission of a year there? Is it supposed to be 21 August 2020 to 30 September 2020, or is it 1 month? I'm quite confused on what's going on there, Chair, because it makes it, not having the date, the year there, makes it very challenging in understanding these figures, because so I don't know, can I just clarify with regards to that, Chair? And so one then also want to understand that in terms of the progress that NSFAS has made, I also find myself in a position as a member of parliament who's been told on copious and multiple occasions that there's this progress, this is being done, SBAX has now been overhauled, and this is what we have in place, Chair. Can that be clarified? Because, you know, then if there's no truth to that, perhaps also the ministerial task team would be able to assist us in getting an idea of how much progress has been made since the incision of the administrator. Because, you know, when we hear these things, we go out into the public, into society, and we tell the constituents that, you know, oh no, great work is being done there, this has been changed, and that has been changed, that, you know, has been put in place. So if that is not the case change, then we have a big crisis, and that needs to be clarified. And then, Chair, we've received the CVs, and that's, you know, yeah, but Chair, I still feel as though there are underlying, like, matters around the appointment of certain individuals and whether or not they were followed, due process was followed. Chair, I think I would leave it in terms of compliance as well, Chair, in terms of, you know, due process being, so if accommodation was booked or whatever be the case, Chair, I think, you know, there are certain procedures in terms of supply chain management, in terms of procurement, that are meant to be followed, Chair, and can there be evidence that that was followed? So if three quotations were to be put in place, and we need to choose, again, which one is the best in terms of, you know, the safety of also the workers, but also in terms of affordability for the state, is there proof of that? Is there proof that due process was followed in terms of supply chain management processes? And then lastly, with the VAT issue, Chair, and many other cases at other institutions that have not been resolved, one thing that we forgot to close on Tuesday was, when will the VUT students be assisted? This morning, myself, yourself, Honorable Litsi, and I don't know which other honorable members, still received emails from students complaining about their allowances. So Chair, can that please be, like, immediately addressed? Because one can only imagine the anxiety that students carry. And so, yeah, Chair, sorry, I think the break sort of discombobulated me, but that's perhaps my concerns at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. At least this time around, you're able to finish. Your connectivity was more stable. Thank you very much. Can we move to Honorable Manamiso?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me firstly welcome all the presentations. And one must say that I'm very disappointed, very, very disappointed. And I want to say to the administrator and those who are actually assisting to victimize others in the workplace that workers' lives matter and they must breathe in the workspace. Chairperson, I want to just remind the administrator that when we're doing door-to-door, as a political party, more especially as ANC, one of the things that we actually emphasized, it was the issue of capable, honest government. And when we have people like themselves, it seems as if whatever that we say is what we don't do. And I would want to just remind him that we have actually promised everybody that we, as the ANC, we would want to create this safe space for everybody so that everybody democratically participate. I'm fully covered on other issues that Honorable Lissie has touched on, Honorable Nkachwa, and as well Honorable Nodata. However, one must emphasize the fact that seemingly NSFAS is something else. I haven't seen such a department in the rest of my life. I've worked as an administrator in political offices, and I fail to understand why are these small issues of supply chain management are not being applied as prescribed when people are doing tender issues. I don't understand to say why is the administrator one and his collective has decided to want to be the law to themselves. I think whatever that they are doing is the answer for our community and as well the students. We've been speaking timelessly as this particular portfolio committee to say, seemingly we are sitting here every time dealing with self-interest of individuals. not about the beneficiaries. And it's very painful that we as young people who are being actually deployed in this parliament, we are experiencing that this damage is being done by our own people. And I think, Chairperson, now is the time that I normally say, this is the right time that now we must bit and bite so that the owner can come out and say, this is what has happened. I mean, it cannot be correct that every time there's a moria of whistleblowers, yet people can just speak as colleagues and workers as well as those who are in charge to actually deal with our people's issues. So it really shows that, Chairperson, really, as this particular portfolio committee, we must actually go for oversight because we are on level one. So at this thing that we are being misled and we are being told nice presentation when we are in this particular portfolio committee, it seems to vanish because now we must go and touch and feel whatever that is happening. And one believes that everything in this NSFAS is not going according to what we've been told by the administrator and his collective. My last question is that I want to know that, and the administrator must respond with yes or no, that during all these processes that we've been engaging with them, can they tell us if they have misled Parliament or ourselves as the portfolio committee? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sibiya. You'll be the last.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for all the presentation. Chairperson, some issues are covered by previous speakers, but the one of the ministers and the DGs is the request to be with us so that some questions should be answered by them, especially the extension of the administrator if Nehawi was not consulted. And we need meetings, Chairperson, where we can see each other. This thing of Zoom is killing us now. The department is going down to the drain. We need meetings. The how is tabling its allegations. The administrator is saying that allegations are incorrect. How is being undermined. And you must remember that even the students told us that they are being undermined. There is a lack of communication, Chairperson. And the administrator didn't say anything about this thing of hand of God. Hand of God. The administrator must tell us about this hand of God. And what is the status of the complaint lodged at the public protector against NSFAS? And the strategic plan and APP and the budget are not aligned. Can the administrator tell us more about that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much, Mams Bia. Mams Bia was the last. We will get responses, but before we do that, I also want to make my few comments who is this one now? Please, let's mute our mics. Okay, I also want to make some few comments on a couple of issues. But maybe let's start with the confidential report, or the report that has to be handled confidentially as per the request of NSFAS. I did say that I think the best way of handling it is to request those who are implicated to also, those who are mentioned in the allegations to also respond to the allegations so that we get the total picture from those who are affected. But just as I just want to just extrapolate some of the responses that are in the report by NSFAS. There is a suggestion that all allegations are without merit, they are frivolous, and all of that. And I know that members don't have this, but I just want to quote just on three instances where there is an admission by NSFAS on some of the allegations made against particular individuals. And let me read from that report in those specific instances. Now, there is an allegation that there was no advert or recruitment process in the appointment of Sean Liberton. The response by NSFAS says, NSFAS acknowledges that this resource acquisition was irregular. An inquiry into the matter ensued and concluded that the irregularity arose as a result of the confusion on the part of the manager concerned, as it was mistakenly assumed that Mr. Liberton was an internal system contractor rather than a contractor secured through a service provider. The relevant manager was reprimanded and the incident was closed. The contract has since expired. So that allegation, there is an acknowledgement that there is merit to that allegation. It was true that there was no advert or recruitment process that was followed in the appointment of Mr. Sean Liberton. The second one is Mr. Ramiz Amuddin. They say no advert or recruitment process was followed. The response by NSFAS says NSFAS acknowledges that this requisition, this resource acquisition, was irregular. And then the same explanation as above is given. And the third one, I'm just mentioning a few, there's a lot of acknowledgement that, admission that things are like that on this one. The third one is Tarin, his fortune. There was no advert. Instead, the administrator introduced the CV and instructed that she be interviewed, no formal recruitment process. The response, NSFAS acknowledges that this resource acquisition was irregular. An inquiry into the matter ensued, the same as above. I can refer to quite a number of allegations and the responses which don't completely deny, they acknowledge and they accept. So I don't think the premise from which we should depart is that there is no merit whatsoever. As I've just pointed out here that indeed some of the issues raised are valid, have got merit, and indeed they have been accepted by NSFAS as irregular. I've not even gone to all of them, and I think that let's allow a process where those individuals' concerns are also given an opportunity, probably in the next 7 days. They comment, and then we can then make this information available to the members, because for instance these three responses that I've read out, there is nothing personal confidential information of those former employees or employees or contractors that is contained, so it will have to be made available. So that is the first point that I would want to raise, and I would like to get comments from the administrator regarding that issue. The second issue is with regard to the remuneration of the advisor. Now, I just want to read an amendment to the NSFAS Act of 1999. So this amendment was done, when was it done? It was the Higher Education Laws Amendment Act of 2011. So it amends Section 17 of that Act. 17C, it says that the Minister, with the approval of the Minister of Finance, may determine the remuneration and allowances to be paid to the administrator and any other person appointed in the terms of Section 17B. So Section 17B says the administrator appointed in terms of Section 17A may, with the approval of the minister, appoint any other person with suitable knowledge and experience to assist him or her in the performance of his or her functions. So Section 17B does give power to the administrator to appoint the advisors in consultation with the minister. But those advisors, their remuneration and other benefits must be determined by the minister with the approval of the Minister of Finance. Now my question is, the report of NSFAS that you received says there was a proper process followed, the advisors were appointed with the approval of the minister, that accepted. But the report does not indicate whether in compliance to this Section 17C, the Minister of Finance approved the remuneration and other benefits of the advisors. It's an important point because it deals with the allegations that there is exorbitant amount that is being paid to the advisors, their benefits is way obscene, and all of that. Now, the Minister of Finance was supposed to approve, in terms of this act, and that information was not forthcoming in the presentations of NSFAS, whether the remuneration structure and levels and other benefits were approved. So I would like to get an indication from NSFAS whether Section 17C of the NSFAS Act was complied with. My other point, I did read the responses by NSFAS, and the administrator was saying that the board approved organizational structure when it came in was then changed because it was too heavy on top and all of that. So my request, because we need to do the comparison, we need to compare apples with apples. We note the statement that there's two heads on top and all of that, but are we able to compare? Can we get a comparison of the approved organizational structure that was approved by the board and the one that was approved by the administrator? Just a minute. Okay, sorry about that. So I was saying that we need to do the comparison of the two organizational structure so that we are able to then come to a conclusion that the previous one was loaded on the top and all of that, because the assertion by Nihao is that it's actually the other way around, that a lot of positions were created and all of that at the top, and as a result there's too many people who have been appointed during the administration, and
the salary expenditure has gone up. I'm saying the salary, the portion of the salary cost of NSFAS has gone up. So we need information to be able to prove that, and for now we don't have. The other point which has been raised by the administrator in relation to the relationships that are there with some of the individuals appointed, there is an indication that there was a declaration that was made, declaration of interest that this person I know and all of that. Are we able to get a copy of such declaration? Because if there is a declaration, it will easily rebut the allegations that were made. The other issue on the salaries and the other packages, the administrator does indicate that national treasury guidelines permit the hiring of vehicles and travel to and from home for advisors. Can you be furnished with that treasury guideline? But I think what supersedes the guideline should be the act which says that the Minister of Finance must approve. Now, also on allegations that was made, which was the appointment of acting COO. Now, the response there is that the acting COO was appointed by the previous board. She was seconded from UCT and all of that. And an arrangement was made with UCT to secure the services of Tasmin. NSFAS was to pay UCT for honorarium, and then UCT was supposed to negotiate with Mrs. Tasmin. And then NSFAS says Section 9.2 permits the board to second eligible person in higher education. I've had a look at that section, Section 9.2. Now the section says that the board may appoint such other employees as it deems necessary to assist the executive officer. So that section talks about the appointment of personnel of NSFAS. It does not say anything about the secondment and all of that. So I am not sure whether the administrator is aware of that section or the administrator is not aware. But this, when I look at it, it's almost like misleading. Because it says that the act does permit for the transfer of knowledgeable people, and there is no such thing in the act. Yes, I've just read it now. So those are some of the questions that I had on my side. Of course, I also wanted to find out what was the honorarium that was paid, or whether it is possible that she might have received twice the payment, one from UCT and the other one from NSFAS. The other questions, I think members have been able to raise them. And again, it will be important that we deal with a specific allegation and get a specific response. This is what we were saying on Tuesday when we were dealing with VUT, that we cannot be general when the allegations are specific. There cannot be a general denial that no, it did not happen. We must be specific on this and that. And these are quite serious, as members have said, serious allegations.
Now, there has been proposal about the way forward, including the forensic, the inquiry, and all of that, but I think maybe for now, let's allow a process where the administrator will then comment. I see there's a hand from the provincial secretary, Mr. Coletta. I will also give Nehao an opportunity to comment on some of the issues that have been raised. But I do, however, acknowledge that it's not going to be sufficient to get the responses now. It's going to be absolutely necessary that there must be another engagement where we will then receive a detailed responses to the detailed allegation. So if there is a specific question, if there must be a specific response. And also there were other questions where NSFAS was saying that there is no sufficient information to respond to those allegations. Now, I did notice yesterday that whatever submission that was made to us, subsequent submission by Nehao, were not made available to NSFAS, and I asked the Secretariat to make that information available. But yesterday, of course, it was late. It was not possible for NSFAS to supplement its presentation with the new information, because that information is there, especially about the individuals. There's more than 100 names that were raised by Nehao of people who were victimized. So on the report of NSFAS, it was saying that information is available. But of course, it was not part of the original complaint by the union. So as a result, NSFAS could not respond to it. So that's hence I'm saying that there will be a need for further details and further engagement with NSFAS. But there are specific questions raised. I will ask that the administrator, or maybe we should start with Nehao, and the administrator will be the last.
Thank you, Chair. I must say I'm quite sufficiently covered by the speakers that spoke before me. But I want to administrator correctly. He said he is accompanied by legal counsel, which in my view, he is the current head of that particular administration, and he's got an obligation to come and account to this particular forum. So why is it necessary for him to bring along legal counsel? Furthermore, we embraced the administration process. But we also know it was not a silver bullet for the administrator alone to be a bastamboro of NSFAS. However, it came as a package. There was supposed to be a ministerial committee. There was supposed to be a board appointed. And in the evidence that we've submitted to you, particularly the recordings and the transcripts, where he openly undermines the appointment of the board and saying that even if that board is appointed, he will put them there in an isolated building and write them up in a report as wasteful expenditure. So those are the things the whistleblower was vilified for, which in our view, we think that it's unfair what has happened, because within the prescript of South African law and the Constitution, we can't crucify whistleblowers. Now we've got an employee, a mother, a breadwinner that has been home for the past year due to the recklessness of the administration. Furthermore, it's very much misleading when the administrator says there's an investigation. It's been saying for the past 2 years that there's been an investigation, there's corruption in NSFAS. He even went on national TV and said that there's arrests made. But he failed to tell this particular forum that what he was making noise about were three employees that were involved in a mere 1,500 rand scandal, which a case was dismissed by the CCMA, and they are back at work. So there's no other corruption investigation that is fingering the workers at NSFAR. So that is misleading. We know that he spent millions in terms of forensic investigation. So if he says he spent 8 million to go and investigate and expose corruption for 1.5, which that particular allegations were even dismissed by the CCMA, then something is wrong. We've been introduced to this hand of God. And as we speak, Chair, the student who received 14 million in WUSU is subjected to a legal process. But no one is facing the music in NSFAS internally. Now we've been introduced by the hand of God. So how can that particular student be crucified for a making not of their own, whilst here the administrator, by his own admitters, acknowledged that the system is not 100%? Because we know in order to be this best fund, there must be someone that authorizes within NSFAR. So we must be taken into confidence by the administrator, and they must tell us. Lastly, Chair, the issue of the laptops. We don't know how NSFAS gets to go and issue a tender worth 3.2 billion. Whilst as we speak, universities have been issuing computers to students. So it's a duplication. I've got my little brother who got his laptop about 2 months ago whilst we were in lockdown. So we know that UCT is done with that process, CPUT, and also UWC. But NSFAS is still sitting here and busy tendering its laptops. So are these students going to get 2 laptops? Because these very same universities will come and claim for these laptops that they issued to NSFAS. So why then is there a tender again for 3 billion for the very same laptops? So we welcome this proposal of a joint inquiry that will be having multi-stakeholders, because we feel SASCO and SAWUS also needs to be part of it. If we can go through a list of our shop stewards, because we may mention that the administrator hates the union because it does not want to be kept on his toes. There are shop stewards that were wholesale promoted unprocedural, that were members of NEHAU. They were manipulated because the primary objective of the administrator is to make the union die in a particular institution. So, Chair, we welcome the proposal of the inquiry, so that we can't just be sitting here and listening to a response, because we have got documents that we've submitted, we've got evidence, but the administrator just comes and gives us a report and dismisses everything that we're saying, which we think we cannot stomach there. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Karolitsyn.
So thank you, Chair, and thanks for all the feedback and responses. I will try and deal with the main ones, and of course, some of the ones that are that will require more detail, we will of course fill that in and submit that, and of course await further guidance as to the process as well.
Maybe before my apologies, Dr. Carlson. There's something that I forgot about the legal person who has been invited, counsel, who has been invited to be part of these proceedings. It was raised by, I think, one or two members and the union. Maybe if you can just clarify that aspect as you continue to respond here.
Okay, so we had a, thanks for that. We had a debate on whether we should have counsel with the top executive when we had planned for this. And so there were two views. One was I have to account, which I did to the best of my ability, and I don't need legal counsel to assist me. In fact, there is no chance or opportunity to consult with legal counsel, even if I wanted to. And then there was another feeling that since similar allegations are being lodged or have been lodged with the public protector, and he is working on this, that would be appropriate for him then to attend this to get a sense of the allegations. So for me personally, I have no requirement for a legal person to represent me or to give me guidance. I was persuaded on that particular score. And if any member thinks finds it offensive, my apologies, but it was not meant to be evasive or obfuscate. There had been, I'm told, president to bring people, legal counsel, to these meetings, but I certainly did not see that requirement for myself.
Okay, so
let me deal with the issues of misleading the parliament, because that's probably the most important response that I need to give. So first of all, in all my dealings with parliament, and I have acknowledged the importance of this oversight body as it represents the people, I have been trying to be truthful and as honest as I could be, and double check the information that is provided for me when I go to parliament. But let me deal with the specifics that was mentioned by Mr. Kagiso. And then I'll deal with because one of the members, I think it was Ms. Manoisa, that asked, did you mislead, yes or no? The answer is no. I did not mislead Parliament, and if I was found to, I would like to be pointed in that particular direction. So on the issue of the VBS issue, I was thinking very hard about this issue, trying to recollect that particular incident that Kagiso referred to, Mr. Kagiso referred to. I'm very clear that he is correct, but where I differ with him is what was presented in Parliament. So that should be fairly easy to check up on as to exactly what was presented. I was very clear in my mind that the previous board dealt with the VBS part of the tender. And so when I arrived, the outstanding part of the tender was the Standard Bank, because it was a joint award. And I could produce minutes, extra minutes, where I was asking, how did this come about, and how do we need to handle it? Because at that particular point, the VBS was very topical. So I knew for a fact that the VBS was not cancelled by me. It was cancelled by the previous board. What was still outstanding was the Standard Bank. I engaged the Standard Bank CEO, and we came to an agreement that tender also be cancelled because of the controversy around it. I would love to see the minutes of that particular meeting, because this is exactly how I remember it. So I agree that it was not the administrator that cancelled the VBS contract. The issue of the SBUX information, the SBUX versus the SBUX wallet. I tried to explain that in my opening remarks. The SBUX system vested itself in coupons, in vouchers, that was handed out to students, which they could then go and cash at particular retailers, predefined retailers, like bookshops and some other retailers. And it was premised on the basis that only certain goods or certain items can be used for that retailers. Now, the assertion that was made, that the three people that were arrested were found not guilty by the CCMA and therefore they're not guilty, that is completely wrong. Their criminal cases are ongoing. But beyond them, we have evidence that there are syndication around the previous SBUX, and even up till today, that there are people cooperating within SBUX with institutions outside. And we are actually quite happy that the committee is chasing for this level of detail, because I think we must make everything that we have available to the committee so that they can see exactly where we come from and whether we are misrepresenting or not. On the issue of Tasneem, Chair, you raised it about the potential misrepresentation. When I arrived at NISFA, she was already appointed as COO.
Dr. Carlson, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to follow up on the issue of the X-Bucks versus the
NSFAS wallet.
The NSFAS e-wallets. I think the point that Gafisa was making is that an impression was created that X-Bucks is different from the e-wallet, whilst in actual fact, it is the same system. The only difference is that the previous one was the voucher, and now this is no longer the voucher, it's now electronic payment. But it's on the same system or same service provider or such, as he was putting it. I think that is the point that he was making about misleading, that an impression gets created that this is different from the other, while in actual fact it's the same thing, except that it's a method of payment.
Well, there is a big difference between the two because of the additional checks that we built in. But I think, to be fair to myself, Chair, I would like to get a technical comparison between the two and present it to the committee so that we can be clear on that. I don't want us to talk past each other. With the other issue which I also need to comment on misleading the Parliament is the late submission of the annual report last year. That we also take it very serious, and we provide a detailed report on why we were late and what caused the lateness of the submission. On the face of it, I was the one to insist that we delay the submission because at that stage I was not happy with the quantification of irregular expenditure. And if we had submitted on time, we would have submitted incomplete information. And I insisted that we complete all of the calculations so that we can present a proper picture in that particular month about the extent of irregular expenditure. That was my recollection. Of course, we will have the detail, and I will also have to draw the reports on what I presented to Parliament, but I can. That is my recollection of that particular point.
Sorry to be this. It's something that is quite important to us, because as you understand that it's quite a very serious offense to mislead Parliament. So please bear with me my interaction.
No problem.
So the issue is the actual reasons that were presented to Parliament for the delay in tabling of the annual report were in fact not the actual reason. That's the assertion that has been made by the House through Kagiso. That the actual reason is the delay that got experienced as a result of the incompetencies that were introduced, because the function was then taken from the people who were doing it for many years. It was given to somebody new, that somebody couldn't do it. So the people who were doing it had to come back to do it. But as the reasons were presented to Parliament for the delay in the tabling, were then the issues of the Auditor General, not the actual reasons. And that's where the misleading of Parliament comes in. So you say that we have to follow up on those ones to verify.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, because I would like to get proper evidence of what I presented, but in the interest of transparency, I tell the committee now what I recollect, but, you know, so I'm happy to...
follow up.
Yeah. So on the issue of Tasneem Salasa, like I said, I found her at NSFAS when I came there. The reasons for appointment, under which clause and all of that, that clause was provided to me, was inserted in our report last night. I'm not exactly sure. So I'll have to go back and find out exactly under which clause and why, if there is a mistake, why that mistake was made. But it was certainly not meant to mislead, because I stood nothing to gain by that. She was, I did not appoint her. And perhaps if we have DHET personnel in the building, they can perhaps elucidate on that. But they told me that there is already an act in CEO in place. Is the issue of okay, let me deal with the other important issue that the chair has raised and trying to deal with the main issues. So both the remuneration as well as the
Prof. On that issue, your report was saying that section 9.2 allows that a person can be seconded with their requisite knowledge. So you accept that section 9.2 does not speak to that.
I'll have to find out why the our law department has quoted that particular section. I can't, so you just have to give me that latitude and find out exactly what under which section she was appointed.
Okay, thank you.
On the issue of, let me check up here now, I want to... Okay, let me deal with the laptops, the duplication that I mentioned, that I can quickly get that out of the way. There is a comprehensive project underway with DHET where all NISFA students have been identified. We have encouraged universities, in fact, since last year, to begin to use part of the learning material allowance for computers. Some universities did that already last year. And so when COVID struck, some of the vice chancellors contacted me and asked me, how can I assist them? Because they've already paid out the teaching aid allowances. And we wrote a full proposal to the minister to address that particular issue. So each person is identified by name. So if they have already had received from universities prior, they are not going to get again because it's offset against the book allowance. The 3.6 billion rand is the 3.2 billion rand is the outer envelope. In other words, if we have to pay today for all NISFA students, of course that amount came down because some universities had already issued laptops. In the cases where they have started the procurement process and they need to recover that money from NISFA, there is a policy in place for that which we have developed together with National Treasury and DHET. Chair, since the names have been mentioned, I want to retract my confidentiality on that particular issue. The issue of the examples that you quoted about when an irregular appointment is made by a manager and then subsequently corrective action has been taken, that is not viewed as irregular because the management or the board would have satisfied to it that the necessary action had been taken and that manager had been reprimanded. And that happens on a daily basis in any organization and certainly in many organizations that I worked in, that if such transgressions happen, it gets dealt with. It therefore cannot be continued to be listed into ad infinitum as irregular. On the issue of the perks or the living conditions.
Sorry, Prof. I don't want us to deny things that it's the response of NSFA. The NSFA says on all these matters, NSFA acknowledges that this resource acquisition was irregular. That is not my formulation. That is NSFA's formulation. But I hear now you're saying that no, it's not irregular. But when in the document there is an acknowledgement that it's irregular. So I don't know. I can consult that, Dr. Karalesen, because in your own report, you do accept that the appointment of the resource or the NSFA acknowledges that this resource acquisition was irregular. So there is an acknowledgement of irregularity here. But you are saying no, it's not irregular.
Sorry. Okay. I don't want to become evasive or appear like I'm playing with words, Chair. So if we said it was irregular, I will stand by our report. I'm trying to explain as to why, what actions we took, and why we regularized that intervention. So I stand corrected on. If it appears like I was trying to play with words, it is certainly not my intention. But we will provide I will go and have a look at this report one more time. and also provide you with further details. But if it was an oversight on us not to declare the other, shall we call it, perks or extra remuneration, it was not because it was not approved. We got the approval from the department for the rental of the apartments and for travel allowances, given the fact that these advisors came from different parts of the country. We did present quotations to the department, and on based on that quotations, a selection was made. It is was intended for two reasons to get apartments. Number one, it is much cheaper to rent an apartment for a month than to put people up in hotels for such such long periods. And secondly, it was meant to ameliorate some of the discomfort of removing people from their homes to be away from their families for such a long time. So, for instance, if it's a holiday, then at least my wife or my kids could come and stay with me during the time while I was at NSFAS. So that was done with the assistance of the DHET, and the process was laid out, and it was signed off on that basis. We will...
So the approval, there is an approval by the Minister of Finance.
I'm not sure.
17C, and I'm sure that you will have familiarized yourself with what the law says. So Section 17C says the Minister, upon approval by the Minister of Finance, must determine the remuneration and other benefits. So traveling, car hire, renting accommodation is part of the other benefits that must be approved by the Minister of Finance. You say there is such approval does exist.
So let me be very clear. So let me be very clear. I'm not going to speak on behalf of the Department of Higher Education. We channel our submissions through them. They then collaborate with their colleagues in National Treasury, and they come back to us and they say it's approved or not approved. So I would be imprudent of me to speak on their behalf. The impression I had was that everything was followed according to the rules, but I can't talk on their behalf.
Okay, so the impression you have is that, I'm sure you are familiar with the law, Dr. Karan. The law that forms the basis for your work. It says that the Minister of Finance must approve the people that you appoint, their remuneration. So without that approval from Minister of Finance, from the Minister, which was approved by the Minister of Finance, it will be illegal to even begin to determine whatever salaries or benefits or whatever remuneration, because it will be outside of what the law requires. So you say that you are not aware whether there is an approval from the Minister of Finance.
I'm aware of the fact that these things were approved from the department side to say everything is in order and that we can proceed. And that is the protocol that we work with. If we send anything to any other department, it is channeled through the through our line ministry. They then engage with their counterparts, and they come back to us and they say yes or no. So even in the issue of the laptop procurements, the OCPO and all of that, we have to respect the protocol. I have no reason to think that that approval was not granted. I absolutely have no reason, because we have always worked like that, and I've never had any comebacks or irregularities in that respect. So,
okay.
But like I said,
let's follow it up and see where.
Yeah.
Because it will be, you know, that is a very important point, Dr. Karalison, because of the many allegations that are coming, not even the allegations, the criticism that the advisors that assist you, including yourself, you are earning salaries which are way beyond what should be paid in the public service, and the benefits that you have or that the advisors have is quite out of the ordinary.
And I think the reason why that section was included in the appointment of the administrator and his remuneration and the advisors, that section was to precisely deal with this criticism. That we must not, you know, have this kind of opulence that people are saying that it is there in NSFAS as an entity of the state. So that section was meant to curtail issues like that, to say this is the maximum within which you can provide the benefits. So as it is now, if for instance it comes out that there is no such approval by the Minister of Finance, the subsequent question will be, what then was the basis for this expenditure? And I've looked at the expenditure. I think it's way beyond about 14 million or so. I stand to be corrected there, but it's way, way above what is an expectation, what is the public expectation of an organization like this one. So it's a very important thing, Dr. Karalese, and it's important that we must finalize, we must check what approval and on what basis was that approval given, because we are a public institution, we do things in terms of the requirements of the law. What the law allows is what we must do, not something that is something that we desire, but which the law doesn't provide for it. So I think we'll have to follow up, because it's, for me, it's quite an important issue, that one, okay. All right. That we get to the bottom of it. Thank you.
Okay, so thanks. Another important question that was asked is how much we spent on the ICT system. Now, the current system that we have was introduced, I think, in 2011 or thereabouts, at a cost of over 100 million rand. We did not spend anything in that order in this under administration, except to upgrade some of the software and, of course, do some development work. I don't have the exact amount, but that would probably amount to normal maintenance, if you could put it that way. And that was to fix some of the bugs that were in the system that prevented from dispersing, getting some experts to assist with some of the ICT login protocols and logs and sheets, and close off some of the cybersecurity loopholes that existed. I can get the exact amount we spend on the ICT system, but the initial system cost 100 million rand in 2011 or 2012, or thereabouts. I know it's over 100 million rand. Now, the other issue on that's very important for us from a credibility perspective is this first-time entry that I hear of this hand of God. And the VUT. I would like to invite the COO to comment on the disbursement process, because this can conjure up all sorts of images about an organization that has got no clue as to who it is disbursing to, why it is disbursing, and the amounts that it's been disbursing. We do have checks and balances in place, but perhaps I would ask the COO just to talk briefly about the disbursement and this mysterious hand of God, and also address the issue of the VUT, because that to me is very important that we clear that one out. If you don't clear that now, that it does get cleared up, and then I'll apply my mind for the rest of the time to the other issues which are important. COO, are you available to log in?
Yes, I am here through you, Chairperson. Let me respond to the question of Honorable Lucia. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, madam, but are we able to see your face? We just want to know.
Let's see how that goes with the video.
Yeah, I just put the video there so that... Okay.
Can you see me?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, we were here with VUT on Monday. The issue of the VUT students, 670 of them, that continue to be paid by the institution was addressed extensively. VUT had, during our application process, there are walk-ins. Those students were 2017, 2018, and some of them 2019 walk-ins. Those students, VUT used their own assessment methods to determine whether they were NERS first qualifying beneficiaries. And they went ahead to disburse allowances to these students without having full confirmation that they are indeed NERS first funded students. In the last 2 weeks, we received the ID numbers of all the 670 students. We validated them against our funded students. We only established that 279 are indeed qualifying NERSFA funded students. We also reported, Chairperson, on Monday that for this 279, the institution submitted their registration data after the closing date. After the meeting we had in Parliament on Monday, NERSFAS has deployed our personnel to go and work with VUT and upload information for those 279 students so that they can be included in the payments. So the question of whether the students were the hand of God students is no. The issues are they were not qualified, not all of them were assessed properly, and the ones that we have confirmed are assessed will be processed. If I may go back a little bit to the issue of the hand of God, Dr. Carolison mentions that NERSFAS is working currently with legacy systems that were procured as far back as 2014. So in the administration period, the emphasis was redesigning of the processes and making sure that as many students are processed as possible. Then the issue of withdrawals of student information was picked up in the quality controls that have been built in the system. So the point that is being put across that there's a hand of God that withdraws, that was identified. And indeed, those students that the system withdraw were picked up, they were fixed, they were put back into the processing. That quality check was done two times in the 2020 application process. If there are any students whose data was withdrawn, I think, Chairperson, my submission will be that that data is also be brought to the committee so that full investigation on it is done on the side of NERSFAS. In the 2021, the design was so thorough. There are no students at this point in time that the quality control staff has picked up as having been withdrawn. So that speaks to the fact that indeed there's no new system at NERSFAS. What is new as the redesign of the process is the quality checks and trying to make sure that as many student data is processed as possible. Coming to the disbursement process, historically the challenges were there were no structure to the disbursement process. Yes, capacity in the disbursement unit is very limited. Now, a lot of processes were manual on spreadsheets, on Excel, and there were a lot of errors. Also, there was no structure to the disbursement process in terms of regulating and predictability so that students can know exactly when are they going to get their payments. That has been resolved. Institutions that have submitted their data correctly, they are receiving their disbursements predictably on the 25th of every month. If we are late, we pay on the 31st. So every month, every student, every institution whose data has been received accurately, they are processed on a monthly basis. The SBAX part was also one of those heavily manual processes. It has been automated. The only thing that remains to be manual at this point in time is the feedback file when it comes back to check what the issues are. And these are exceptions that we continuously work on to make sure that we catch those students that may have not been processed for one reason or another. And some of the issues that lead to these exceptions are, one, students change their cell phone number. Students use a different profile, those accounts will not pay. They will come back in the feedback file as exceptions. And NSFAS is aware of those, and there's a team that's looking after those processes to make sure that in the next payment cycle, the students are brought on board. At this point in time, so in 2018, 2017, I think the payment was so bad. At this point in time, if you look at the universities, for instance, we have recorded over 470,000 students. We are paying over 467,000 students. So there has really been a significant improvement in the disbursement process. There's a lot that still remains to be done in perfecting and making sure that 100% of the students are processed. Chair, that would be my submission. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. So you say the VUT one has been attended, you know.
We have the team sitting with the VUT personnel at this point in time to see why their data is not coming through, because that was the commitment we made to the committee on Monday.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, CEO. Could you take your video off? Otherwise, you might suffer from bandwidth. Chair, I'm not sure how much time do I have, because I really would like to address as many issues as possible. Can I get guidance from you?
I don't know, but let's get the responses as far as we can. But we've already said that there is some information that will come later on.
I'm trying to cover, as you notice, probably the big ticket items. But let me start now from Honourable Letsi that started off. The IT system verification on salaries or income. I will tell you frankly, Chairperson, that I was shocked at the primitive nature in which salary incomes were determined at the time when I arrived at NSFAS. In essence, what would happen is that the person's details would be sent to a credit bureau, and based on the data in the credit bureau, a determination would be made on the eligibility of such students. Now, credit bureau data are notoriously unreliable, and in many cases, itself declaratory. In other words, people would add to their household income, for instance, a young one of the children that might be working, to improve their credit profile so they get higher credit ratings. And that has been a concern, that had been a concern of mine for a long time, because as we get complaints from the field, it became evident that we cannot fully rely on that particular data source. I then also became aware that not all the income of a household is reflected in its income state, in its pay slip, because some very rich people can pay themselves very low salaries but live off very generous dividend income or rental income. So I knew that the household income was an incomplete picture if taken from the credit bureau. Applying my knowledge that I had from SARS, I contacted SARS, and after long negotiations with SARS, we agreed to an exchange of data to improve the verification system. Now, the reluctance of SARS to provide such data is exactly lying in the fact that SARS has to guarantee each taxpayer a level of confidentiality. So there was a lot of legal work that we had to work through, and there was also a lot of systems alignment that we had to work through. So that's why it took almost as long as it did, close to 18 months, perhaps 2 years, for us to get to the stage where we can now use SARS data to exchange. Now, what is correct is, yes, we do exchange data at the moment, but we are working and building towards an automated exchange of information. And the automated exchange of information will speed things up much quicker, but we are reliant on and mindful of SARS' primary mandate is to look after their own business. So we also stand in a queue somewhere over there where the other development work. But the exchange of data, I'm told and I was shown, is very effective, and we can, with data manipulation, we can rapidly compare data in income levels. In the recent past, when we unfunded 5,000 students, we were very careful not to take marginal cases, and there are some very rich people on that 5,000 list, by the way. And we are consulting our legal counsel as to what would be the best way to recover that funds and what way should we proceed. And once we have proper thought is through, we will come with a proposal to our oversight bodies as to how we best should deal with recovery of overfunding or wrong funding as it has happened. On the issue of the whistleblower, we have in general re-established our hotline, which was dysfunctional. We found, as we worked through this, 120,000 queries which were unanswered for a long time, whilst we were sure that it was answered. And in that hotline, we are also now are able to track students whistleblowing on other students, students whistleblowing on corruption or administration at university level, and a whole host of those things. So we do take whistleblowing serious, and we don't dismiss it. In this particular case, at the risk of speaking out on a case that I believe is still in the legal process, so I'm going to talk in general. In this particular case, this person was the secretary of the EXCO, with certain confidentiality attached to that. Now, I think it's unconscionable of a secretary of a board or an EXCO to select a chip from a recording and pass it on in a subterfuge manner to the DHET. It was not passed in a normal manner. It was passed in a manner that speaks to subterfuge. And I don't think any organization will tolerate its board secretary or its EXCO secretary from leaking such information without, because it's already dangerous if it's provided without the necessary context. And so I am very worried that the impression is created that we are just firing whistleblowers because they leak information. And by the way, I am known to be very robust in my assertions. And whatever I said on that tape, I have said in meetings also. And DHET officials can testify as to some of the robust discussions that we have because of the very nature and importance of NISFAS and the issues that we were faced with. On the issue of, again dealing with the big e-ticket items, on the issue of the laptops.
No, maybe just on that issue before we proceed. And I see members are already asking when are we going to be done with the meeting. So maybe let's just agree that we will not go beyond 2 o'clock in the wrap up. So we've got 30 minutes remaining to do that. But just on this issue of the whistleblower, maybe we need to have a follow-up engagement, Prof, because what Nihau is saying is that this person was sitting in a meeting of EXCO, listening to the conversation, and she, as a whistleblower, as a good citizen, then approached the department, not any other person outside of where NSFAS is reporting, to say that I was sitting in a meeting where there was an assertion made that the ministerial task team, when the people come here, are going to be frustrated, they are going to be undermined, they are going to work at the cemetery or something like that. So she was concerned about that, and she gave it back to DHET. She gave that information to DHET as a concerned person. So you say that that does not completely fall within the definition of a whistleblower. Because a whistleblower is somebody who bring information to the attention of authorities about something which is not right, which is unlawful, which is illegal, that has been planned. And in her view, she thought that is the case. So I don't know whether you want to comment on that, but I think
many people may have a different view about how we treat whistleblowers.
So this was, Chair, this was not a person sitting in the meeting. This was recording the minute secretary. She took the minutes of the meeting. So it was not a part of the meeting. And the way it was delivered to DHET was delivered in a parcel and camouflaged as a gift, I believe. But I don't again want to talk on their behalf. They contacted me and said that they have this information. Can I have a look at it? Because it is somebody, you know, this is somebody that has delivered it at the particular premises, and they are concerned in the manner in which it was delivered. But I certainly, as far as I'm concerned, as my experience goes, if you are a recording secretary and you leak part of that information without informing your boss, that is very, very dangerous, because this was not, there was no reason that I could think of that she was, could be afraid to raise the matter with me. There was no precedence of her being being told to shut up or not to speak her mind. In fact, in all my meetings, everything. But I mean, that's something that we need to debate. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think any organization will tolerate its recording secretary from leaking minutes to the outside world.
Yeah, but you see, the issue here, Dr. Carolison, is I've had a look at the transcript. The issue here is that there is a concern that the administrator of NSFAS is speaking ill of the officials of the department, the DG, the other senior members of the organization. That is the first concern. The other concern that is there, which Nehawe is raising, is that the administrator openly in a meeting of the EXCO is planning to sabotage the work that is going to be done by another team appointed by the minister. And that for her is a concern which her conscience could not allow her to sit with such kind of information. It had to go to the relevant people, which is the Department of Higher Education and Training. And I can tell you, I've read that, although I did not finish all of it, but it's quite concerning the point that was raised in that transcript. The aspersion that was cast about DHET, senior officials, and so forth. And where I was seated, you could see that there is a reason for a person to make this information available. It was quite concerning. But I think let's move from that item.
Yeah, okay.
We may share different views, but certainly where I am sitting, that information is quite concerning.
Okay. I'm trying to, again, focus. So let's deal with the laptop process. So I would be very happy, as I said in my introductory remarks, that this process will be audited by the Auditor General, and we would welcome any other legitimate process that may be instituted to find if there was any wrongdoing. Perhaps I should just clarify one thing. The impression is created, or may be created, that the administrator cancelled the tender in the middle of the process. The administrator cancelled the process based on the recommendation I received from the BAC. And so after I applied my mind and I considered the consequences thereof, that this will delay further the distribution of laptops to students, I consulted with the National Procurement Office. And then I informed the minister that I have made the decision to accept the recommendation from the BAC. So it was not a reckless cancelling of it. It went through a particular process, and I'm quite happy that it was cancelled, and the reasons that were provided for me as to why the decision was taken, I satisfied myself with that. But of course, a lot more detail must be looked at. I was not party to the discussions in the committees. I only received the recommendation in writings. The recommendations I received in writing, which I am quite happy to share when the time arises for engagement of that. The allegation that we are appointing people with no skills, I think let me just talk quickly about that. And here I'm going to talk to permanent employees. Of course, if you talk about contract employees, these are people that you need for a particular time or for a particular project, and therefore you might therefore contact an outsourcing body or what they call in the industry a body shop and specify your specifications. They then provide you with the necessary people, which you then interview and place. So that will be temporary people or people on contract. In the case of permanent employees, we have an extensive recruitment process, which normally would start with a specification of the job, the determination of the job level, if there is no such determination, and that would also then determine the salary range in which you would advertise it. Once the advertisement has been placed, there's normally a time period for closing. The candidates are shortlisted according to the criteria, and then interviews are done. Now, in conjunction with interviews, we also are following best practice of doing a whole host of checks, a criminal check, a quality check, a credit check, I think there's another check which I just can't get to, but extensive checks are done on the fitness of the candidates. They are also sent, in many cases where required, they are sent for aptitude testing or, I lost my track again, let's just say aptitude testing. And then based on that information, a panel would then make a recommendation to the line manager. And where required, the recommendation comes through to me. And, of course, I would then apply my mind, and if I have certain questions, I would raise it with the panel. Now, as I said earlier, the only time when I get involved is when it's people that report directly to me that I will form part of that particular panel of employment. Now, appointing people with no skills, Ms. Ngaba went through this entire process. We have the full transcript of the process and the interview panel and the deductions and the reasoning that took place in there. I was part of that panel, and we will make that available because I feel for being accused of not having the right skills, whereas I'm sure that if we go through the process, we will find the logic as to why she was appointed in the manner that she did. The cost incurred from the CCMA, the detailed reports, we will have to, of course, go back and make sure that we develop all of the necessary information. In many cases where it would have been prudent for us to continue the case because we knew we had a winnable case, we preferred to settle because the settlement amount was in many cases a lot less than the further legal cost that we would have incurred. And that determination was also influenced us in which cases we would settle. But I should remind Pidget that the settlement did not preclude any further criminal action that may be uncovered once the individual has left the organization. So I will admit that we have settled. We have settled with the CEO in the first month of me arriving there. And that was a prudent decision because if we had continued with separation discussions beyond that, he earned quite a big salary. It would have cost us first quite a bit of money. So I'm just saying this, but we will make all of this available. I have submitted my scorecard for year one on, against my terms of reference. A similar scorecard has been developed for year two and a full report on the achievements of the administrator in the second year of administration was provided through to DHET and the minister. I have no hesitation to provide it also to PCHET so that they can acquaint themselves with the content of the work that we did in the second year of administration. I would just like to also add that there is a terms of reference for the third term, which I manage again, and the terms of reference for the third term, in essence, has to do with the handover to the new board and to the new incoming executives, and assisting the ministerial task team to complete their work. So whilst under administration, of course, we learned a lot of lessons. We have accumulated a lot of information and data, and myself and Professor Balim exchange that information on a regular basis. He has unfettered access to all our executives. I said to him, please don't call me if you want to speak to somebody. So he has unfettered through my office to interview ICT personnel, to interview finance personnel, and then on a regular basis we touch base as to the progress that they are making. With regards to the filling of executive positions, which is a big concern for both myself and the minister, there are three critical positions which has not been filled yet. That is that of the CEO, the CFO, and the CIO. The CIO, we came close to making an appointment. We had to stop that, unfortunately, due to reference checks that did not check out, and we are restarting that process for the CIO. The CFO, we have had interviews, and we are busy with reference checks, we have done the shortlisting, and at the same time, we're doing the reference checks, and the interviews for the CFO will be scheduled within the next week or so. This is the second round of interviews, because we did not find the correct person in the first round. The issue of the CEO is we have gone through an iteration of recruitment. We did not find the correct candidates, and we are now in a headhunting phase, and we will be interviewing some candidates which we've headhunted. I think it's on the 13th. And I want to just emphasize this and share this with as a departing administrator, that the business of running NISFAS is extremely complex, and you need in such a person as a CEO a multiplicity of skills. You have to have, of course, a good understanding of the public sector finance system and the regulatory system. You have to understand systems, because I think that's one of the shortcomings that we had in the past. The CEO not completely close to systems and the finances. You have to have a political nose. You have to be able to interact with parliamentary bodies. You have to interact with students and their politics. And you have to be able to talk sensibly to a ministry and the department of a different government department. And often finding all those qualities in one, and trying to find all those qualities in one person proved to be an extremely elusive task. And we may have to take a particular direction and supplement the other skills of that particular person. But we have been wrecking our brains to get a CEO, because at the moment I'm standing in a CEO, and together with the administrator's duties, it is just simply too much for one person and may lead to allegations of conflict of interest, as we have seen. And it's certainly not a healthy situation. Let me just see what else is there. Achievements against DOR. Procurement advisor problem. Okay, so the issue of irregular appointments, we've had a discussion on that, Chair, and we certainly appreciate the fact that you are making time to also give these other people that were named in that an opportunity to present their case. We will be guided by the Chair going forward. I hope I have not left out anything major. I'm going through my list, and I hope that I've covered all the main points in my responses.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Carolison. As we said, the other issues we will follow up with them. We'll follow them up in our next engagement, some of which will have to be
in writing. Yeah, I think on the issue of the report that we could not deal with today, confidential report, we do have the responses of NSFAS. So I think what we need, we will require the assistance of NSFAS to afford those who are mentioned there an opportunity to submit their own representation, and then you can then forward it through to us. You can summarize the mess you have done with your responses, and the detailed one you can then send it to us. because we'll need your assistance to get them to respond formally to the issues that are raised about them. Although it concerns them, but it was about the process that was followed by NSFAS. Anyway, but we do understand that they've got rights there which must be respected. So we will then request the parent to communicate with yourself. I take it that the responses of NSFAS are still going to be like that, are not going to be changed. but what we need only is the responses from the mentioned officials. Look, as we are speaking here, I was just trying to go through my previous information. And I happened to get a document that was presented by the administrator, Dr. Carolison, to the colloquium on funding of PSET sector, which was held on the 6th of November. Now, slide number 6 on poor financial controls. I just want to read this one. It says numerous previous audit reports, including the NOTLA internal report, have highlighted the extent of dysfunctionality. Some immediate interventions included 1, termination of VBS and Standard Bank contracts, which were concluded in violation of the PFMA prescript. 2, established delegation of authority and decision lock. 3, segregation of duties, especially within the disbursement process. And then it goes on like that. So this is the issue that the Nehao through Kagiso was raising on the NS, on the VBS. But here it says that the immediate issues following the NOCLA report is the termination of VBS and Standard Bank contract. The other report, so this was during the colloquium in November. I see there's also another report titled The Administrator's Report to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, Science and Technology on the 29th of August 2019. So this report also on slide number 7 has got the similar information as the report that was presented in the colloquium. Poor financial controls, numerous previous audit reports, including the NOCLA internal report, have highlighted extent of dysfunctionality. Some immediate interventions included 1, the termination of VBS and Standard Bank contracts, which were concluded in violation of the PFMA prescript. So these 2 reports which was presented to Parliament by the administrator do suggest or give an impression that the administrator cancelled the VBS and the Standard Bank contract, which were concluded in violation of the PFMA. On these 2 reports, this is what is suggesting. And so I do take it that we need to follow up, but certainly on the VBS and Standard Bank one, we don't need to follow up, because on this information, it does say that the administrator did cancel. And if it is not the administrator who canceled the VBS contract, then we've got a problem. Because here it says that this is what happened, which was information that was given to us, not on one occasion, but on two occasions. So I just thought that just that one quickly we can dispense of it. But the others will have to follow up and find out, because certainly, as we've all agreed, sending information to Parliament is quite a very serious offence. But we have to follow up and engage and understand the context, if there is a context of presenting something which was not exactly how it is, but we'll have to engage on this one and the two others that Nihawe has raised. We certainly take that very seriously. But look, I think that we will have to have a follow-up. And we will then make sure that we prioritize that. I think in the next 2 weeks, we should be able to have all the information that we require. I think NSFAS, by now, NSFAS has got all the necessary information from the HAW, including the information that they were asking for. So that information is there. We have to prioritize a follow-up discussion in the next 2 weeks to get to the detail and be specific about the issues. And where things are, where there is merit, I think it's only better that it must just be acknowledged and exactly the same way that NSFAS has done on this other one. So that if things, something is in black and white, it's a fact, let's just acknowledge and then deal with the issues where we think that there's no merit in those allegations. But we'll do that in the next 2 weeks. There are specific proposals which I think we need to present those proposals by members in the meeting in the next 2 weeks. There is a proposal that there must be an inquiry on this matter of maladministration there. I think let's move it to that meeting. There is a proposal that there must be a forensic investigation to be conducted on all allegations that are raised by the House. I think let's satisfy ourselves in the next meeting that we have received, there is specific responses to the specific allegations, and then we can then make a determination at that point that we need further assistance either through a forensic investigation or not. And then there is also a proposal that there must be the issues about the irregularities in the tender of the laptops must be referred to Scopa. I did say that we ourselves have expressed our concerns. We have requested some information, and then based on the responses that we have received, we have come to a determination that let's allow the process to be concluded. The response from the administrator was that the tender has been cancelled, but it is an ongoing one, so they are going to use the same information. So there might be information from the tenderers which they are going to utilize in the next phase of the tender, and so they don't think that they can give us that information. So we said, okay, it's fine. Probably that that is something that makes sense. Let's allow the process to be concluded. And once the process is concluded, we can then come back to it. There's nothing stopping us from doing a joint process with the SCOPA, with the Standing Committee on Public Accounts. But we also will be interested in engaging on that aspect. So let's allow the process to be concluded first, and then after it has been concluded, we can come back to the issue. The misleading of Parliament, we've already concluded on that we ourselves will follow up, certainly on one aspect that I was reading here, already the information is there. On others, we will then follow up and get the transcript of those meetings and get a further explanation from Dr. Carol Leffen, whether indeed there's been a misleading of Parliament, because as I said, that is a very serious one. Anybody who appears before the Committee of Parliament or Parliament itself, National Assembly, must present information that is truthful, information that is factual. So if there is any such allegation, we take it very, very seriously. And then there was a proposal that we ought to get some explanations from the minister. The minister must be involved, which is a sensible proposal. I don't know. I would say, honourable members, maybe for now, let's get the answers from NSFAS. And once we've got the answers from NSFAS, then that we can request and schedule an engagement with the minister based on what NSFAS has given to us. So matters that require the department, we will then escalate them to the department or to the minister. But for now, the issues involve NSFAS and the allegations that we've received around the administration of NSFAS and the accounting officer and the accounting authority. You see, in this instance, the accounting authority, which is the board, and the accounting officer is one person. So the accounting authority and the accounting officer is the administrator. And surely we have to get answers from the administrator of the entity, given the responsibility that he has been given and the mandate that he has been given, in line with the Act, NSFAS Act as amended. So let's do that first, and then the issues, we will isolate the issues that require the department, and then we'll engage with the department at the later stage. I hope I've been able to cover the issues that members have raised. There's also an issue about the status of the public protectors complaint. I think we'll follow up. We'll just find out with the Office of the Public Protector as to how far is the process, so that whatever way forward that we come up with in the next 2 weeks, we don't duplicate the issues. But Parliament has got a responsibility to exercise oversight and ensure that there is accountability by the executive and all bodies, all entities in the state. So we have got that responsibility, and the Public Protector, the Chapter 9 institution, they've got the responsibility to also investigate allegations of abuse of power in the state. So they will also, but it's important that we understand what they are doing, so that if we also need to engage or leave other matters to them and deal with other matters, we do so.
But I think let's treat this as an ongoing process, and then we will meet again in the next 2 weeks. We'll certainly make sure that we look at our program and make sure that we schedule this engagement. It's an important engagement, and as far as it's an important entity in the PSAT system, NSFAS is responsible for the disbursement of almost 40 billion rands to the poor and the working class students. We cannot allow it to fail, as Honorable Mukacha was saying. The very important institution is an institution that belongs to the people of this country. It's an institution that collectively, all of us, have got the responsibility to make sure that it succeeds. It's not only the responsibility of those who are dealing with the day-to-day management of the affairs of the institution, but this is a people's institution. We all have got a collective responsibility to make sure that it functions. And if there's something that seems to be not going right, it is our responsibility as well to come in and make sure that things go well, together with the minister, working with the minister, of course, to make sure that this institution does not fail. Otherwise, we will. There was something that I wanted to ask the COO. I'm not sure whether the COO can quickly respond to that. Kafiso was saying that SBAX and e-wallet is the same thing, but the CEO say e-bax system is automated. Did I get that right, COO? Just quickly clarify me on that one.
So, Chairperson, I think when you go into the detail, we'll be able to pick up the differences between. So if we're looking at a technical system from just the word of a tool that is being used, there's no difference. When you look at a system from a point of view of what does wallet offer versus what SBAX offers, there are serious differences. The SBAX product was a voucher product, and students would then be channeled to go and use a voucher at a particular merchandise. The new system, I'm not going to say the platform. The wallet thing is students must get their cash unencumbered. Can I use that word? So there's not going to be any voucher. If a student has to get 800, it's 800 like that, and they can use. They can go and use it at any merchandise that they want, or they can withdraw it as cash in any manner that they want to use it. Indeed, the service provider is SBAX. Now, the issue is the challenges of SBAX were, from the NSFA side, the processes were very manual. There was no system, basically, to kind of, there was no process and system enabled processing of the SBAX payments. Currently, in the systems of NSFAS, there is that functionality that has been built to can enable system-to-system communication between the SBAX platform and the NSFAS platform. So there is a difference there, Chairperson. I think I'm not going to go into the details of the merits of his allegation, but where I look at it, it's an ecosystem that is completely different and enhanced from the initial SBAX kind of platform. I must say there had been many strikes of students which were using the SBAX platform. There are no issues on the wallet kind of platform right now, except for a few students that get kicked out because of what I've already mentioned, students that are changing numbers and whatnot. So the ecosystem of payment is different.
Not sure if I'm providing clarity you're requesting, Chair.
It's quite a very complicated response to a very simple question, whether is the e-wallet system automated or not?
It is automated. Yes.
Okay, so it's not performed manually.
So it used to be performed manually under before, while it was still called FBAX. That part now is automated.
Okay.
Now, yes, yeah.
It's fine. I think let's follow it up again when we come back, because what Kakiso was saying is that FBAX and e-wallet is the same thing, same service provider. It's not automated. It's still performed manually, and an impression is created that the SBAX is different from the e-wallet. But let's have a discussion. You say that it is automated. Let's have a discussion again in the next 2 weeks to get to the bottom of that that issue. But thank you very much, COO. Dr. Carolison would like to thank you for making time available to come to the portfolio committee and then to engage on the issues raised by Nihau. Together with your team, would like to thank Nihau leadership, led by the Provincial Federation, Western Cape, Comrade Eric, Gwaneta, and the team for coming for this engagement. As I said, we'll have a follow-up engagement in the next 2 weeks, and we will issue our communication to get to the bottom of these issues. Otherwise, thank you very much, honorable members, for your patience. Our meeting on Tuesday also finished at around 2:15 after having started at 9. This one almost is 2:15. So thank you for your patience, for your engagement. We will meet again. I think next week we've got a meeting. Yeah, next week on Tuesday there's a meeting. But this one will schedule it to happen in the next 2 weeks to follow up on the issues. Otherwise, thank you very much. It has been quite a productive day. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you.